What up, what up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game podcast here with John LaRocca, the energetic John LaRocca at 10 p.m. at night as we record this. John, what's going on?
It's going good. I was just telling you right before we got on air, I was like exhausted, just like dragging all day, and then a couple cups of coffee and I'm ready to go. 12 rounds. Let's do it.
All right. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about here. I sent an email, or not an email, a tweet out earlier. If anyone wanted to send us a note or a question, and we did get one, so we'll pull that up when we talk about some WWE stuff. The other thing I wanted to mention is on the Fight Game Media Network, Fumi Saito and Justin Nipper have a show called Write That Down. It's about Japanese wrestling history. But, you know, Fumi's a big time guy. Like anybody when it comes to wrestling in Japan knows Fumi. He of course, is well known in the U.S. as well. He does a show with Jim Valley on this very website. But during the pandemic, he and Justin started to do shows, and it's the most popular show on the Fight Game Media Network feed. And they talked to Medusa this week. So they got to talk to her about her career. She's got a book coming out. So it's a really fun show. And we have another guest next week. I won't spoil it for that, but Fumi and Justin do have another guest. It is somebody who was pretty big time in the Attitude Era. When you and I did our 97 and 98 WWE recaps, he was just in those shows. We were talking about him a lot. So a little teaser, but that'll be next week. Follow at Fight Game Media on Twitter and you'll see all the notes and all the stuff about that show and, you know, future shows as well. So, yeah. All right. So last week we did a new segment called Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down. And we're going to bring it back. I think I got some pretty good feedback on it. So that's how we're going to kick off the show. Did you want to go first? Or did you want me to go first?
I'm going to go first. Thumbs up, right?
Thumbs up.
I'm going to go with Mark Briscoe. Yep. Just for his strength. When the news came, Jay's tragic death, it was like, you know, talking about everyone, his family, his kids. His brother Mark, who's been on the road with him for like 20 years and, you know, plus, you know, their life.
Yeah.
And I was just, God, oh my gosh. And then he's just been a pillar of strength, you know? And he blows my mind. Like, there's a video that Caprice Coleman had. He was at the airport and he was talking about, it was right after the last week's Dynamite. And he's talking for a while, and then he says, I have someone who wants to speak, and it's Mark Briscoe. And he was just so strong, you know? Yeah. I actually watched that thing twice in a row because it was just amazing. So I'm like, just in awe of this man and his strength.
Very much so. We mentioned the quote from the mom last week, too, like that family, their faith in what they believe in and where Jay is right now. It's unwavering, right? Like,
yeah.
And they even mentioned that. You know, like, this is how you know that how strong our faith is in a moment like this. So, yeah, it's tremendous. You just hope and pray that the kids, you know, keep improving. Mm-hmm. But they seem to believe that, you know, this where Jay is now is the better place, and they're happy for him and they're dealing and all that. So, yeah, plus. To be able to have that kind of wrestling match,
yeah,
right? You know, soon thereafter a tragedy, that there's something in there where that guy was able to do his job at a moment where, you know, I don't think a lot of people would have showed up to work, right? Like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
All right, my thumbs up. And so I'll quickly recap it. Thumbs up and thumbs down is just we're giving kudos to somebody in wrestling, and then we're kind of given a little criticism to somebody in wrestling or in sports entertainment based on what something recent that happened. So mine is Jey Uso. Now, Jay didn't need to show the strength that Mark did. This is a different kind of thumbs up. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I want Jay Uso to be my thumbs up is that there is the bloodline angle, the current bloodline angle. It goes back a few years, you know, to the dark days of the pandemic and the Thunderdome and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He was kind of the Sammy in the ring with Roman. And so, you know, you're going back 2 years and Jay's wrestling Roman and he's the one who Roman is talking down to and everything. And that, and so now fast forward to, guys, maybe it's been 3 years. Was that storyline 3 years ago? Maybe 2.5, something like that. Or
I would say 2, I would think. Yeah.
So anyway, the real key to this bloodlining, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. I think everyone watched Royal Rumble, so they know what we're talking about, but we'll kind of give a little bit more detail in a second here. Sammy, obviously, if he decides that Roman, you know, he's had enough with Roman, then it's like a, you know, it's just the bloodline beatdown of one guy. But there was a little hesitation in Jey Uso, and he walked out. Now, we don't know if Jey Uso is like still bloodline or he's not bloodline. We'll find out on Friday. But the job that he did in that angle, the facial expressions, the desperation, the walking away, like Sammy was great. Roman was great. Everybody involved was great. Poor Kevin Owens had to just hang out and just get pummeled for 20 minutes. But to me, Jey Uso made that segment. I thought he was he was just fantastic. So that is my thumbs up.
It was just a great, just when you thought, okay, this is it. Sammy turns, right? This is what we're waiting for. There's another layer to this.
Yeah.
Another mystery, right? Another, got to tune in next week. So really well done. Really well done. I don't think this was started, like, you know, I don't think this was like, okay, we're starting with Jay and Roman, and then we're going to end up with the Sammy thing now. It's just kind of like, you know, as things develop in story, you know, you just, things happen. Like, one of my favorite two shows is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and there's a character named Spike, and he's only supposed to last one episode. He ends up being one of the most popular characters in that show, right? It just kind of evolves, and that's what the story is. And it's been great. So, yeah, great pick. Jay, that was an amazing moment when he... Just when they, I mean, what great production too! Like the camera shots, the camera's swinging, like to Jay, perfect. Just perfect.
So you're saying Vince McMahon isn't like James Gunn and detailing the next 5 years of DC?
No, I don't think so. Wrestling's, you can have a plan, but you know, a lot of things happen, and you know, you gotta, but. Recognizing at least Triple H did, but I thought Sammy was, when was Sammy put with the bloodline? Was it during Vince McMahon's run, right? I'm pretty sure.
I'm trying to think. I'm pretty sure
that Heyman, saw what Sammy's doing. Roman saw what Sammy's doing. He's like, hey, this will be fun. Let's do it. It just kind of, you know, and it just got over. So great stuff.
Yeah. All right. My thumbs down is on kayfabe wrestling press conferences.
I didn't watch the Royal Rumble press conference.
I didn't watch it either, but there was so much back and forth on Twitter about it. You know, oh, you wrestling media not even asking real questions. And so, I mean, I'm pretty hard on the wrestling media when it comes to that stuff, because what it is it's an opt-in to whatever the game is. And that's why, you know, I always go back to Double or Nothing last year. And I wasn't even going to be at the press conference because it's so long. It's two hours after the show's over and you're still talking to people. I don't go to those things as a journalist. So I kind of skate out of that. But the thing that really turned me off to them was, MJF loses to Wardlow, and then there's all this talk, you know, he misses that fan convention thing, and then first question, Tony Khan, what's up with MJF? I have no comment.
Yeah, that's when Arizona got up and walked away.
At that point, you're like, okay, I don't want to be part of this story. Like, this is Tony's storyline here. And by being involved, you're kind of opting into being a part of it. And that's not what this stuff is about. However, as hard as I am on the wrestling media, the other part of it is, and this came out in the WWE one after the Royal Rumble, is you get access, right? They're nice to you. They let you do things with talent. You get to talk. And for the content creators, like that's their YouTube stuff, right? They're going to get so many more views interviewing Bianca or something. So at that point, you're like, well, if I don't play ball, then maybe that's taken away and I can't do my job or my role or my passion effectively. I wish they would figure out a better way to do it. Like, let's not call it a press conference, and it's not a scrum either. A scrum is like, the person in the circle around the reporters. Let's do it in a different way so that, the people who are trying to find news, Sean Ross Sapp, Dave Meltzer, Mike Johnson, guys like that, like that's a different thing than, some people who need to shoot the press conference or shoot videos for their YouTube channel. Like, it's just a different thing. Yeah. And, I was harder on the content creators previously, but after watching that WWE one, I'm just like, okay, a lot of this is just them wanting social media PR from the content creators. And I don't know if it's dishonest. I wouldn't say it's dishonest. It's just part of the con man wrestling, thing that kind of frustrates me, but that's just what it is. They can't do it any different way.
Are you mean to tell me it's not as good as back in the day in 1992 when Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, and Sid Justice are out there for the WrestleMania 8 press conference, and Sid gets all mad when Hogan gets the title shot against Ric Flair, and you cut to him, tearing up that whatever the format he had, and
or the Austin and Tyson one after WrestleMania. I think to some extent, those journalists back then, they were like, okay, if this is BS, then I'm not showing up. And in order to get those people to show up, Vince sort of had to promise that it wasn't going to be BS, So I don't know. It's just different. Everyone's got an opportunity to be a part of those things pretty much these days. If you're doing something, if you have a channel, if you're semi-popular, you kind of get on that radar. But again, it's just these companies, they are sort of using this carrot, for bait a little bit. Tony less or so, like, because I think Tony, he will talk to more people for sure. Like, you don't have to be part of F4W or Fightful to talk to Tony, right? He'll talk to other folks and other podcasts, if he respects them and he thinks that they do a good job. But let's just figure out a different way to do it, because it's just, it's not on the up and up, and it's kind of frustrating if you're putting people in these situations. All right, what's your thumbs down?
My thumbs down is for a performer, a WWE performer, Alexis Bliss. I'm probably going to get a lot of hate mail for this. How can you pick on poor Alexis Bliss? But
you even got her name wrong, Alexa Bliss.
Whatever. And
you're going to get more hate now.
That match with Bianca was so bad. Her performance, it just looked ridiculous out there, with her size difference. I think I liked her when she was the manager, was it with Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy, mm-hmm. right? Tag team. I like her as a valet, but I'm not a big fan of this whole, let's continue on with her being possessed by the whole Uncle Howdy and all that stuff. It's just, I don't know, but her performance itself in the ring, I just thought, wow, why are we giving this spot to her? It's because I understand her dolls sell. I don't know those things to sell, but jeez, man, keep her as a valet, keep her out of the ring, put someone else in that spot. So I almost went with Bray Wyatt because as much as I thought the spectacle was interesting, I was thinking like, well, what are they going to do? Is he always going to have this blackout match now? Like, is because he is this look the look with his the black light in the makeup, or is this new look going to be when he comes, whatever his demon side become this mask that I can barely even see? Like, it was very strange, but I just kept thinking like, man, that right after that really good men's Royal Rumble, we got that Bianca Belair Alexa Bliss match, and I was just like, oh man, I'm getting up. I can't watch any more of this, you know.
I felt bad for Bianca because I was like, man, you know, this other character's kind of bringing her down a little bit on a big show. You know, the worst thing that happened to Alexa Bliss is Liv Morgan. Like, now Liv Morgan is the cute blonde who's able to wrestle a little bit, and she's become the internet dandy, whereas Alexa Bliss, I don't know if Alexa Bliss was ever as popular as Liv Morgan was with the internet, but she's essentially been replaced by Liv Morgan to me.
And it's another one I don't get. Tractor Girl, but I just don't get.
I don't really get it either, but she does have a nice following. There are a lot of people who wanted her to win that Royal Rumble, and I was like, really? You want Liv to win? But yeah, she's got a fan base.
Yeah, her going an hour with Rhea in there, just anyways. But yeah, so Alexa Bliss is my thumb down for this week. And see, I did my homework.
Yeah, yeah, you did. Good job. Well, it's because I didn't send you a note 3 hours before the show.
That's right.
Hey, you got to come up with something. Yeah. You knew. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Royal Rumble. The first thing coming out of the Rumble one of the things, Rhea Ripley wins a match, and I was like, oh, I want to see her wrestle Bianca. Now, the Charlotte thing was always on the table. And lo and behold, she's going to face Charlotte.
Yeah.
And we kind of made fun of this whole thing when she lost to Charlotte the first time at WrestleMania. And Triple H was like, it's going to make sense. We got this whole story. You know, it's going to be great. And then she never got her win back. They just went away from it. Like, lots of stuff happens, but I don't know if they didn't ever plan to do it or whatever. I just don't want Triple H to go on one of these pressers and go, see, I told you 3 years ago. I told you this was going to have a story.
I don't think he's going to tell the truth what really happened there. But, you know, I mean, this is supposed to be Rhea's coming out part. It was that WrestleMania in Miami, right? The big win. But politics happened, and then, you know, Char got away, and then Diva didn't even drop the belt to her in NXT. And, you know, I think this time, I think Char's going to make good. I hope, at least. Gosh. I mean, Rhea is just, there's something there, you know, right now.
Yeah.
Like, she's hit on all cylinders, and people are really into the Judgment Day and her.
Even the promo, she's out there by herself, right? She's not out there with the Judgment Day, and she's talking and getting that whole segment over. And by the end of it, you're like, oh yeah, I kind of see it. Like, you know, even though she's this baddie, she's mommy, she still sees Charlotte as a little bit of the top of the mountain. That's the top. You know, she's got to get to the top of the mountain there, and that's one of the ways to do it.
And you don't have to, like, do Bianca and her right now. Like, you'd save that for later, and you can always have that in your back pocket. So
the only thing the only small thing about it for me is, like, man, you know, one thing we have learned with these last few WrestleManias and with CM Punk going off the deep end is you always say, oh, you know, we'll put it off, we'll build it up, but sometimes it never happens. It's just something happens, and, you know, I remember it was this time last year, Ronda comes back and she wins the Rumble, and Dave and I go on the air and we're like, yep, we think it's Ronda and Becky for WrestleMania. And then we had to come back the next week and go, nope, they changed plans. It's going to be Ronda and Charlotte for WrestleMania. And then so we were like, okay, well, where's Ronda and Becky? And he's like, well, it sounds like it's going to be for the next WrestleMania. So unless plans are going that way, doesn't look like it. We may not get Ronda and Becky this year either. So that's what I'm saying is, like, sometimes, you know, you have this creation, you're like, people are wanting it, you put it off, and sometimes you just never get there. So I'm crossing my fingers, and I imagine we're going to get Bianca and Rhea, because to me, that's a really big match. But this is, you know, if Rhea does have a great match with Charlotte, and that spectacle of these two women who are like 6 foot tall, mm-hmm. and you know, now Rhea's got even more size on her than she did the first time.
Yep.
You know, when she wrestled Charlotte, so it's going to be, I think the optics are going to be fantastic for that match.
What's the rumored Bianca title match at WrestleMania?
Well, she's got the chamber. She's not wrestling in the chamber, but there's a match for the number one contendership. And, you know, I'm looking at the women who are in that match. And then the women who are in the qualifying matches still for that match.
Mm-hmm.
Asuka makes sense. They brought her back and they gave her a new look, which is a throwback look for her.
Yeah.
And if Bianca is going to have an awesome match, you know, Asuka is definitely someone she can probably do that with. But that would be my hope. But I don't know. I didn't see like a surefire, like, yep, that's the one you got to do it. So I don't know.
I kind of feel like it's going to be a multiple women's match. I have a feeling like four way or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Raquel's out there.
And they'll probably do the battle royal or something, right? With Raquel. She should win that at least, you know?
Yep. All right. Now we have learned, because Big Dave Meltzer, The Rock, not doing it. It's too busy. Austin, not doing it. Turned down whatever the match was they had for him this year.
Yeah.
Sammy is the Elimination Chamber match for Roman.
Mm-hmm.
That means Cody and Roman is your main event for WrestleMania. I don't know what night. But our question was from our buddy Brian. Now, I'm going to screw up the last name. Nosenchuk.
Yep.
Brian.
You can call him APW Brian.
APW Brian. he sent a note, or he sent an email and said, looking at Mania, biggest current roster stars, heated stories, what direction do you go? Is Cody's star power greater than the overall story of Roman versus Sammy? Now, our friend John Muse, who had written something up about booking this whole angle to WrestleMania, he thinks that the Sammy story is giant, and that you could kind of attach Cody to it at some point and push the Cody and Roman stuff later. But it does look like it's going to be Cody Roman. If you were to put on your booking boots there, how would you have done this thing to get to WrestleMania?
I think you can accomplish both goals. I think you can accomplish Cody beating Roman for the title. And I also think you can do Sammy beating Roman, not at Elimination Chamber, but post WrestleMania, post. I don't think Sammy beating Roman for the title is necessary,
mm-hmm.
but Sammy beating Roman should happen, right? So that's kind of like how I feel about it. I think Cody, from what I saw at WrestleMania, a lot of people weren't like going to hijack the show and be upset about it. They're really into Cody and his story. So there's two really good stories going on right now for mm-hmm. Roman. And like, I mean, it'd be crazy if Sammy beats Roman at Elimination Chamber, but you know, not, I don't know. I don't even think it's going to title. Is it for the title? Is it just going to be like a grudge match?
I'm not sure. I mean, you know,
You
would think that raises the stakes for the match, just because the fans are kind of bought into it, right? If mm-hmm. you don't make it for the title, then you know, for that show, I think the fans will be like, ah, you know, that they want that little glimmer of hope that Sammy could win.
Yeah, I still think the match you should do at WrestleMania is probably going to be the Usos versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Let them win the titles there. But I think like post WrestleMania, I would do a match where, you know, Sammy does eventually beat Roman. Roman doesn't have the belt. I think, like I said, Sammy beating him, even if he's non-titles, Sammy beating Roman right now would just hurt Cody,
yeah.
you know, when he finally wins it. Because if, you know, Cody has to climb that huge mountain. If that mountain's already been kind of knocked down a bit, it's not as big. So I think we'll see. I'm really, the rest of the Elimination Chamber match is curious because I'm sure Cody's going to play in that finish or post match or somehow, mm-hmm. you know, and be figured in with Sammy and Kevin. Maybe there's a, you know, potential 6-man tag matches coming out of that, you know, and stuff like that. You could do a lot of stuff. So, but I would still, I like the idea of them sticking to their guns, going with Cody. I think Cody with the belt is better than Sammy. Sammy doesn't need the belt, right? And if he does win the belt, it should be a short thing. It's kind of like Kofi. Sounds like a good idea. It's a great, nice moment when it happens. But once he's champion, you're kind of like, you know, done with it. And then you can either go too long with it like they did with Kofi and people just got like, eh, or you just do a quick child change. So I would just go with Cody as a champion because you want to stand. But I think Cody's going to be eventually a long-term champion for the WWE. I kind of hope they keep the one damn title still. I would love to, I would love that. And I hope Triple H is really want that as well. But
he's the up, he's the one who was the recipient of the original splitting up the Undisputed title.
But you know what I like? And was, this was before I thought of, I was gonna put Triple H as my thumbs up, but I had to go with Mark Briscoe because it's just so inspiring with his strength. Is that the booking decisions that Triple H to make recently beyond the Sammy stuff, like the men's rumble, I enjoyed. I thought they featured the talent now. You know, they had Booker T, that was fine. Yeah. You know, same thing with the women, they had Michelle McCool, it's cute, whatever, right? But they wasn't overshadowing. You're not like, oh man, you know, it was focused on the current roster, which I liked. And even the Elimination Chamber, like when they said it's like going to be for the US title. He's elevating the secondary championship, the very important titles, but they were just there for the longest time. Now the U.S. title is starting to mean something. The Intercontinental title has meant a lot since Gunther won the championship, right? So I was going to give a thumbs up about that because I thought he's making these belts mean something again, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I see. I looked at the U.S. title thing being as like, oh, we need a chamber match. That's what I looked at it as. Because they don't have the second title to do that match. I thought maybe you do the women's chamber and then you don't need a second chamber. You just do the women's chamber and then you do like, you know, you Roman, Sammy, Brock, Lashley, you know, Solo, Kevin Owens. And you have like these big matches on top and you don't need to do a second chamber. Like I still don't understand exactly why they need the second chamber, but maybe it's just that's the way they do it these days.
Yeah, I know he was, Triple H talked about, like, you know, we shouldn't force, like a Hell in a Cell shouldn't be forced on a pay-per-view, right? And I thought maybe the Elimination Chamber would change too as well, but it looks like they're sticking with it, and they're going to go with the men's Elimination Chamber, and they're going to go with the women's one. I'm kind of hoping they're going to pay this guy a lot of money to do it, but I want to see Brock work twice at Mania, night one and night two. If they can somehow, some way, hold off this Lashley Brock Lesnar match to where night one is Lashley and Brock, and it's just a, you know, slugfest, you know, and Brock comes out a little worse from where he wins, but he comes out injured and stuff, ribs taped up, elbows taped up, all that. And then when he has his championship match, that's the plan with Gunther for the Intercontinental title. Gunther beats Brock, who's, you know, not 100%, and gives Brock an out, and then you can kind of do a rematch from it too as well because he's wasn't 100%. So, but I'm hoping that Gunther doesn't lose the title. I hope he breaks the Honky Tonk Man's record. That's my hope. Someone needs to break that damn thing.
Honky should come out and like, oh, be God, like, you know, I'm breaking this thing. Yeah, I'm winning this thing the day before, and then Gunther just destroys him.
He's Honky Tonk Man's gonna show up, and he'd be like, "What do you guys want me to do?" And he's gonna look at the board, and he'd be like, "Oh man," he's gonna do like a lot of the job guys in Georgia when they saw they're against the Road Warriors. They're like, "All right, I'm out." You know, so.
You know, though, if you have Brock work twice at WrestleMania, he's gonna ask for two paychecks, man.
Sure enough, dude, they made $7.7 million on the Royal Rumble, dude. What are they going to make for WrestleMania? You know,
they got two shows.
He's worth it. I love Brock. I'll love to see that guy twice.
Yeah. Okay. So, I wanted to talk to you about the Bloodline thing, but we'll save that at some point. You know, we'll talk about it a little bit more as it evolves, just to save time, because we still have one more thing to talk about before we review Dynamite, which is Did you see this note about AEW running select weekend house shows?
Yes, I did. Yeah, cool. And they're, you know, certain markets, and you know, if they come to the Bay Area for a house show, what do they call these house specials? What they call them?
House rules.
House rules. House rules. Yeah, house rules. I would love to go to a house show. I want to go to a WWE house show. I don't want to go to SmackDown or Raw. I want a WWE house show. Go classic house show. So, if they're in town, I would love to go to that.
My main issue is if they were to do like a loop and like go on a lot of house shows, I think it'd be a money loser because they're, you know, they're not even drawn great for TV. They're doing better though, but it does look like it's a select, like they're going to wrestle at the specific markets that they probably think are they're going to be successful. Mm-hmm. Select weekend, so it's not even every weekend.
Yeah.
So the arguments for doing this is I hear this, and I assumed that this was going to be one of the arguments, which is, oh, now these young wrestlers can have more opportunities to wrestle. But there's a little bit of a problem with that in that if you need to draw for that show, you're going to need to bring the stars out. Like the fans, they're going to do the meet and greets. They want the stars. And you can throw some top flight in there, open the show and do 10 minutes or something. But I don't think this is going to be an opportunity for all of these. Let you know, Sky Blue's not going to be able to wrestle 14 minute match against, you know, Jamie Hayter or something to improve. I don't think you can do that with just this select number of shows, because you're going to need to draw for them as well. And you're going to need to have, you're going to need to put all your biggest folks on them.
Yeah. Once people are, they're really going to, I'm sure they're going to load up the first few, but then people are going to start noticing, hey, did they keep this up with the stars? Or they're going to start like I said, oh, great. We got, you know, Butcher and the Blade in the semi-main event. You know? They don't want that. So, but yeah, you're right. Like people who go to house shows, they want to see the people they see on TV. They want MJF. They want Bryan Danielson. They want Jon Moxley, you know, and they want the Mega and the Bucks, right? If they don't get those guys, I think eventually you'll start seeing those. You know, I think the first will do well. I think they got to do smaller buildings than they are doing Dynamites and Rampages.
Yeah, but for sure.
That should be the plan. But it'll be interesting. I'm looking for, if they come to the Bay Area, and I hope they do, you and I will be there.
Yes. I would definitely go to an AEW house show. All right, let's talk about Dynamite. This Dynamite has been on a roll from the perspective of the crowds are filling these shows, the crowds are hot, the action is for the most part really good, and then they're sprinkling in a good Bryan Danielson wrestling match right in the middle for me and you. And
they gotta make up for the lack of logic that happened the first couple of matches. Jesus Christ.
But it's much more of a gumbo of a show, which was, you know, their strength early on, which was like, oh, you get to see luchadors, you get to see Japanese wrestling, you get to see grappling, you get to see crazy, Darby Allin, you get to see Gaga, Orange Cassidy stuff. So there's like this sort of like, oh, there's something for every kind of wrestling fan. I think they're kind of getting back to that. I didn't feel like there was overly goofy stuff outside of the Elite stuff. Maybe a little bit too goofy for that segment, but
Brit stuff as well.
I didn't mind that as much, but we'll get to it. But they're trying to tell a story with that. And I wasn't completely offended as I normally am when I watch like Cassidy and the Best Friends or something. So, all right. For first segment, right out of the gate, Jon Moxley versus Hangman. Moxley jumps him before the bell, and they spend the first 5 minutes of this match outside of the ring. So the match doesn't even start. They go into the crowd. Moxley's got him in a figure four in the crowd. Page gets a beer, throws it in his eyes to break the hold. Mox still doesn't go back in the ring. Page throws a chair, hits him high. I don't know if it hit him in the, I think he got his hands up, but throws a chair at him, suplex onto the chair, and then they finally go into the ring. When they go into the ring, John Moxley blades right in front of the camera.
Yep.
He goes into the corner. He's sitting in the corner. Camera's right on him. And I'm like, this dude just cut himself on.
Spits it out of his mouth where he had the blade, grabbed right it, slices his head. I was like, I mean, whatever. I mean, that's, you know, cameraman should know, you know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There should be, you know, Tony should know, hey, don't shoot Mox. He's going to, you know.
But shouldn't he also, like, bit more discreetly?
Yes, 100%. There's plenty of opportunity in that crowd where the camera can't really see him, you know, like, you could done it there. And I'm sitting there watching this match, and I'm like, why are they brawling all over the place? And it's funny, because at the conclusion of this, like, in our main event, a no holds barred. I'm like, well, yeah. What the hell? Yeah. This was a no holds barred. Hangman Page is power bombing Moxley through the table, and there's no disqualification. And then Moxley, I know it's in his hometown. The best part of this match is him coming out with his dad, because I thought his dad was cool, like all serious and stuff. I thought that was awesome. But other than that, it was like, what the freaking Moxley the Undertaker? He's kicking out of this. He's kicking out of that. He's kicking the tombstone. And then the buckshot lariat, it just got so indie. And yeah, I'm just like,
there was a DVD from the top rope, which the Avalanche DVD. Why is everything the Avalanche now?
I don't know. I talked to Dave, he knows all that stuff. It's like the Oihara moon salt and shit. And then there was that bump that Paige took off, that it was like a Darce choke on the top rope into a superplex. And he goes clunk clunk clunk. Like, oh, that must have sucked. Like, that must have sucked. Like, he didn't fall flat off that, land perfectly flat, distribute all the shock. He just goes, da-dunk. Ugh. But yeah, it just got so excessive, right? Like, it's just too much for me.
So there was a dead eye. Mox kicked out of that. There was something called the small package driver.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
The small package driver. Mox had also had put him in. It looked like he was putting him in another figure four, but then he did something different. X couldn't, it must not exist, because X didn't have a name for it. He was like, he put it, and then he just didn't call it anything. I was like, man.
And the mask got stuck in his mouth. He had
when you fool that guy, like, the move doesn't exist. That's what I believe. There was a buckshot lariat. Yeah. Moxley kicked out of the buckshot lariat. Paige put the bulldog choke on that Mox reversed into some sort of cradle to win the match. Were you surprised that Moxley won this match?
No, because Paige was getting a lot towards the end. I felt like there was going to be some kind of a quick flash pin deal. I mean, the cradle looked cool, but then what's Paige upset about?
He was mad. He was like a poor sport.
He was a poor sport. So is he going heel? I guess he's going heel.
He may have been mad because Wheeler Yuta was kind of in his face about losing, maybe.
He was like bypassing Wheeler Leader, like, get out of my face. And he started pushing on Mox's head. I don't know. I'm guessing we're going to get a fourth match probably at Revolution with some kind of gimmick. I don't know what they're going to do on, you know, scaffold match. Who knows what they're going to. These guys, what can they do now, you know?
I'm going to guess that the majority of fans liked this. I thought I was like you, though. And there's another match when we get to it, which was probably actually a little bit better, but still very indie when it came to it. Now, that may be where the seeds of AEW come from, right? So to that extent, It's probably okay for a lot of folks, but yeah, you know, I like the last match better than this one, but you know, they tried to kick the show off with a bang, and you know, it was a big match, and they got it started. I just not my favorite match between the two of them.
Do you feel like because of the main event, they should have held off this match till maybe next week?
I think they're just trying to load these cards. I think they're just trying to. They're just trying to get those viewers, you know. They finally got over 1 million again last week. So yeah. I think that's what they're trying to do, is they're just trying to, you know, it's the time to do it too, because they're going to start negotiations this year at some point. So when you start negotiations, you want those ratings up.
I just feel like it kind of took me a while to get into the Darby Joe match, because I've already seen all this. I've seen you guys fight in the stands. You know, yeah. I saw this.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they went a little over the top with it at the end, because they wanted to distinguish it a little bit. Right. And then it was over the top.
And then it was kind of weird. Like, I think after that last match, they didn't shake hands or anything, but I felt like there was some kind of mutual respect between each other. Didn't you think that? Like, did you get that vibe? I mean, I felt like, you know, it's 1-on-1. You knocked me out. I knocked you out. It's, you know, and then all of a sudden here comes John Moxley jumpstarting a match on Paige. And I, you know.
Well, I think it's because he was talking shit, right? Like, he was like that was Adam Page for these last 2 weeks while Mox was
he really talking trash?
Was knocked out. Remember, he's like, I'm gonna put you in the dirt, or and he was
at one
remember
point,
he
I think
was
he's
saying,
asking Renee, how is he doing? That's all I remember.
Well, but that's what we were saying. Was that supposed to be off camera when he sort of thinks that the camera is off and then he really cares, really does care about him. But So
it weird.
And he was kind of rude to Renee too. So I could see why Mox would be angry.
It'd be kind of cool if, like, they had, like, this, you know, there's just still an issue between these guys, and he is selling it for the third match. Both are 1-on-1, and they have this crazy match before the bell starts. They're in the audience, referees, officials, everyone's trying to get them back in the ring to start this match. They get them back in the ring, they start their match, they go boom, 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 and then they go out again and on the floor, and it's crazy, and they're officials are trying to get him back in. They try to do it a couple times to get this. Maybe they separate him. And like, you know what, fans? We want this match to happen. We don't want it to end this way. We're gonna bring it back an hour or two, right? At the top of the hour, we're gonna put these guys out there again. Hopefully, these calm down enough to have a good quality wrestling match that you want to, you know, bring you with a conclusive finish. And they start having a nice little match. You know, they kind of settle down. They kind of cool down a bit. Then it gets heated again. Then it gets crazy again. Then they're all over the building. And then here comes the security. Here comes the officials. They're all trying to, you know, stop this from just, you know. And then they have this leads to, like, you know, the rubber, you know, the official rubber match. Some kind of big match at Revolution with some kind of stip, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they do a cage match or something. But we also had another match, or not a match, but another situation spill out to the arena on this show.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of chaos.
That's what I was saying. Like, I felt like, okay, if you're going to do this match between these guys, maybe wait till you do, you know, next week, because you already have a no holds barred as your main event this week. So,
all right, there was a Joe Darby video package setting up that for the main event. They made it very clear that that was our main event. There was a segment with Renee and the Bunny. I missed Rampage. I really wanted to watch it, but I missed it. So there's some of the stuff on that happened on this show. I may not be connecting the dots correctly because I didn't watch Rampage. But did you watch the Jamie Hayter Emi Sakura match? Because
I mean, you said Emi Sakura. I'm not going to watch Emi Sakura.
Everybody I've seen has nothing but good things to say about that match. That's why I want to. It's still on my DVR, so I may.
I deleted it.
I may get a chance to watch it.
I don't know. But yeah, this was silly. Like, I felt like as this was going on, I was like, why can't they just do a graphic?
Yeah, you know, this would have been fine with a graphic.
Yeah, but
so the Bunny asks for a match, but she didn't ask for a title match.
Yeah.
She asked for an eliminator match.
Moron.
Why would anybody ask for an eliminator match?
Yeah, I mean, she should say, like, I want a title shot, and Jamie Hayter should say, yeah, I'll give it to you, but we got to make it official first, you know, with Tony Khan.
Yeah.
But then again, like, is she going to win anyways?
No.
Yeah, just, I mean, I would think Jamie's winning.
I mean, Jamie should just say, F the eliminator match. I'm going to put the title online.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's the badass. Bunny's not the badass. So
yep.
I just thought that was weird. And then smash cut to Toni Storm and Saraya beating up
guys,
poor Britt Baker.
Guys, there's something going on in the back. Hey, can you put on the screen right behind us? Just Put it on there. We don't want to. We don't want to move.
Yeah, the bad girls are beating up on the babyface Britt Baker there. Two on one.
What'd you think of Jamie? I thought this is not the best use of Jamie Hayter, because you put her in position to do this really bad acting job, and she's
like, run.
She's like, no, she went spin around a circle. What? Like, no, it's like, oh damn, and it bailed. You know, like, you know. It's like she did this whole
deal. Out of all the times that they cuss on this show, that would have been a good time to cuss.
Or just, oh, you know, and yeah. You kind of just hear a tail end of it, you know?
So we get the Acclaimed. They come out. They're facing the Bootleg Beverly Brothers. What is this team called? Paul Fontaine knew this
I remember.
Team. The Outrunners?
Yeah, that's their name. I almost forgot. I've seen them.
How did Paul know these were the Outrunners? And when I saw them, I was like, oh. The poor man's Beverly Brothers. That's what I thought when I saw them.
I think they do like a they do like a tip of the cat to the 90s. You know, everyone's doing 80 revival stuff, yeah. Right? They're doing the 90s. So, I mean, they did fine, I guess, for a short time they're in there.
They did the scissors, just like Hogan and Savage doing the Mega Powers handshake.
They look like they'd be a team good for ROH. Invest in nice little mid-card heel team.
So the Acclaimed win, quick elbow drop, quick win, and then Colton and Austin come out. They want a shot at the title, and the baby faces said no. I was like, huh, interesting. I thought you guys were fighting baby faces here.
Well, they did in a very cute way of like, you know what? We're the people's champion. We do what we, you know, we're with the people. It's cool. Like, hey, we're gonna ask the people. Let the people decide. And they say no, and it's like, I thought was kind of cute the way they did it. The Guns music, I dig it, man. It gave me like this cool music from WCW vibe. Like, they just kind of like the generic cowboy music, but still sounds pretty cool. I love these guys. These guys are great. The Guns.
So Billy gets frustrated again and he leaves, and he's just like, you guys just, why don't you just beat the shit out of each other? So he's walking down the aisle back to the back. I think it was Austin who grabbed the mic and said, just like you did when we were younger, turn your back on us and go drown your sorrows at the bottom of a pill bottle.
Mm.
That was a rough one.
That was a rough
one. That made him turn around, though. He turned around. Yeah. He got in his face. And Austin did his very best to... I wish someone would have given him some eye drops, like right before Billy comes back into the ring. He just throws it. I mean, if Mox can blade right in front of the camera, let's give this guy some eye drops, because Billy's in his face. Austin is he's looking sad. He doesn't want to look his dad in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the one who said it, but it brought back bad memories. And then Gunn said, "You think." You can be like me, or whatever he said. And he's like, you got your tag team title shot. And he walked to the back, and the baby faces were like surprised. They're like, huh?
I was kind of hoping that he would say, you want that match? You got to beat me.
Yeah, that's
and
what
my
I thought.
Partner, Mike Barton.
That'd have been awesome. I thought it was going to be a handicap match. I thought it was going to be the sons against the dad. But I mean, this is, we're, like, Billy's turning, right? Like, is that where we're going?
It feels that way. Maybe Vince Russo's booking a segment. If that happens, we'll know he's getting a tryout again. I don't know. Do you mess with this? That's this hot act with the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass gimmick. Like, it's still pretty over, man. It's still great energy to come out.
Who could you give the Acclaimed? That would still work.
Gosh.
I mean, back in the, when we were younger, it'd be like, oh, Missy Hyatt is all of a sudden with these babies.
Mama ass.
Like a hot, like a very attractive woman. Like, that's what they would do. Yeah. Who's
Mama ass?
Yeah.
Sky Blue.
I mean, I'm just thinking of like, who else from Billy's time could they bring in that would kind of be cool? Like, you know, X-Pac seems like he's still in good favors of WWE, so he wouldn't be a guy to come over. But I mean, somebody from that era that's you know, the fans would just go crazy for would be cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, is he turning? Gosh, I do want to see the Guns as tag team champions. I want to see them get a run. They're good kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. All right, Jungle Boy with Alex Marvez. He loves that team with Hook, but he wants to be a champ all by himself.
Good. He's listening to our show.
Yeah. Takeshita against Brian Cage. This was the other match that I said had, you know, lots of crazy spots. My favorite line on this whole show, they're talking about Takeshita's height. And Taz goes, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He's like 6'1 or 6'2 because he's about an inch taller than me.
Yeah. I get it. Like you said, it's like podcast talk, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, I don't know. You gotta leave it out.
Sometimes it works. Sometimes they don't have the punchlines. Like, they're not Bobby the Brain Heenan, which is the problem. Because if they were, then you could do that kind of commentary and it'd be fine.
Yeah.
Cage no sells the brain buster. He just gets up. That's like his thing, is to get up and no sell something, but then he just gets punched and then he goes right back down.
It's just, yeah.
Gets hit, this match. Got hit, then he got hit with another brain buster but he kicks out. Then there was the brain buster from the top rope, the avalanche version, and then Takeshita hit the running knee for the pinfall. So Takeshita got a win.
Yay. I mean, this match, this was driving me nuts. Like, right off the bat, like, Cage on the floor gets Takeshita for a power bomb and throws him into the ring post. And I'm like, damn, for all that, for a cutoff, like, that's a big, I could do it. That's a big injury angle or something like that off that. No, it's not even the cutoff. It's just, like, they get in the ring and Takeshita's back on his feet, you know, a few seconds later. And there's a lot of zero to hero stuff with Takeshita. It was very indie match. And then the official cutoff was Takeshita, the babyface, missing a knee in the corner, taking like the lucha bump over the top rope, but lands on the apron.
Has anyone landed that knee in the history of pro wrestling? The knee to the guy who's in the corner?
Maybe Jun Akiyama.
Okay.
But anyways, so, you know, Takeshita takes the bump of the top rope, lands on the apron, and then Cage, for the official quote-unquote cutoff, does that, you know, super strong power suplex where he's standing on the rope and muscling up Takeshita, you know, from the apron all the way, suplexing back on the floor to get a pop. You dumb muscle head ass. You are the heel. Indie mindset. Still can't get out of it. You know, and it's just, and even Takeshita, like, okay, he hits that big brain buster. That big move. Pin him there, right? Now he has to do his little knee. And it was like, you know, like, yes, I'm glad he won.
But that's wrestling. Like, the same thing with the Cody and Finn Balor match. Cody had to do three crossroads to beat Finn Balor.
It was a good match. I didn't watch that match, but
it was okay. It was okay.
But yeah, no, three. Good. You don't need three, right? Yeah. For Finn, maybe when he does.
Not only was it three, it was the Three Amigos version of the crossroads. Well,
and that's great for Roman.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Finn. But it doesn't need that for Finn, right? One crossroads is enough for Finn.
Yeah.
Three for Roman is I can understand that.
Roman might get six now that we think about it. WrestleMania, I mean, six crossroads.
Yeah, I hear from people that this, you know, there's a lot of not listening over there going on. And it's like some of the producers just like, they just do what, you know, it's like sometimes these guys are never, Brian Cage is never going to learn. I mean, he's just never going to learn. I mean, the reason why he got fired from the WWE is when, you know, I think they told him, like, go out there, have a match, but don't, you know, have a basic match.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't do that. And they said, all right, he's gone, you know. So, but it's just like, dude, come on, man. Like, someone has to be like, you know, maybe not. Like, okay, we talked about this last week. You have Prince Nana out there.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you paying this guy? Tony, if he's just going to go out there to accompany Brian Cage in the ring, use him for the cutoff, use him during the heat. He just sits there. I feel so bad for the guy. You know, he's a non-factor.
Yeah, totally. I thought the same thing. I hearkened back to our conversation when I was watching him on this match going like, I wonder if he's going to do anything. No, he didn't.
And
I think I heard him once say something to Brian, and I was like, oh, he's there.
Yeah, and then, like, after the match, he's giving some lip to Brian you know, but it's like I only saw it because I just noticed it real quick. And then that was, but no one really paid attention to that. Right. So,
yeah,
frustrating.
All right. Renee with the Jericho Appreciation Society. This is a little bit of a, we go to this when we, it seems like this is a, what Tony goes to maybe when he doesn't have anything great and he needs to extend something, because we had something called the Garcia Guevara Gauntlet. And the idea is that Ricky Starks, in order to get to Jericho, Ricky Starks first has to go through both members of 2.0 in singles matches. Then they'll decide whether Garcia or Guevara goes first. But if he wins all four matches, then he gets Jericho. So I'm assuming Jericho and Starks at Revolution?
Sounds like it.
And why would Starks just be cool with this? Starks like, yep, I'm in.
What about the guy, the owner of the company who makes matches on a whim? Just like, why isn't he like, you know what? Yeah, let's have my, that's fair. You know, Tony, you know, Ricky Starks, you have to go through all these guys and then wrestle a handicap match to get Chris Jericho. It makes no sense, is it? It's not balanced, right? Like, you're right. Again, we're going through this with MJF and Brian Danielson. We've been going through this many times throughout the history of AEW, and we're just doing it again. And I'm tired of it.
I think go to the well one too many times here. Gorilla Monsoon used to say. They should have done something different here. Ricky Andretti beat Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
Then Ricky beat Jericho.
Yep.
So this is all about Jericho getting a rematch against Ricky. Why does Ricky have to go through the gauntlet? Why isn't Jericho going through the gauntlet?
Why can't this be a match that happens at Revolution? And in the meantime, there is matches with Ricky Starks and Action Andretti versus 2.0. There's singles matches with Danielson and Guevara. There's a tag match with Andretti and Starks versus Guevara and Garcia. And then finally you do the match, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's very frustrating.
All right, we see the Elite at a basketball court. I think it said Wright State in the background.
I was gonna ask, was that part of that building? Because they're there. They're in that building right there because of Wrestling Rampage.
Yeah.
Like side court.
I wasn't sure exactly where that was.
What's the Nut Arena or another arena? Is that a basketball facility for college basketball?
Yeah, I would have to see where exactly they were. They were somewhere in Ohio, but I don't remember exactly where in Ohio.
Dayton, right?
Is it Dayton?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, I'll look it up after we talk about this. Okay,
get our crack team on it.
So the Elite, who we were reminded are the trios champions, and the reason why we haven't seen Omegas because there were some visa issues going on, and the promo was about having the match with AR Fox and Top Flight. And they used a version of the very famous line from The Wire about they need to shoot their shot and they better not miss. And then they passed it to Nick Jackson, shot a little 15-foot jumper. Nice form there for Nick. I like that. I like the form. I was like, oh, you know how to play a little bit. I could tell.
I was hoping he was going to do the old
dead throw behind the back. Yeah.
And then someone, you know, that's standing on top of it, just, you know, throws it
in there. And so they're going to have a match next Wednesday. So as they're setting up this match for next Wednesday, I guess Stokely Hathaway just moseyed into the gym. Maybe he had his basketball shoes on. I was like, you know what we should do, guys? We should just, you know, get a quick run, play some 2-on-2.
Dude, during this promo, you should hear this sneaker screeching. And it's like, you know, the Firm and Matt Hardy and Isaiah are just doing a little, you know, 2-on-2, you know, and then.
So they set up a match for Friday with Ethan Page, Matt Hardy, and Isaiah Cassidy. Don Callis mentions NFT of putting Matt Hardy in a move or something, and then Excalibur kind of clowned him because NFTs are they've passed their peak of popularity, I guess. Yeah. We could say.
Yeah.
And then the end to this whole segment was Isaiah Cassidy walking up to Kenny Omega and just moaning in his ear, and that was the end.
Before this, before that ridiculousness, like, Omega's promo was like, hey guys, yeah, we'll give you a title shot. Now, if I remember correctly, Top Flight and AR Fox won that cluster six-man tag team battle royal to earn a shot. So they already have a shot.
Yeah.
I thought that was strange. It's almost like they forgot. We want to forget it, but you know, but it's just, that was weird. And then I started like, okay, here you go. You know, here comes these guys. And
yeah.
Poor Stokely, huh? He was supposed to be involved in the CM Punk stuff, and now he's just hanging out with Matt Hardy and Isaiah Cassidy. Where's Mark Quinn? He must be hurt or something.
I know. I don't know. I hope after this promo was done, they're like, all right, 4-on-4, let's go. Like, what you have, you're in a basketball gym. Omega had his Jumpman sweatpants on, like, that's pretty, just in my mind, cut, Brandon, you jackass, turn the camera off, all right, now let's just play some hoop. That's what I hope happened after it was over.
Or what about Matt Jackson beginning, Brandon, are we on cool, eye wink, and at the end, turn the camera off, Brandon, you idiot, like, oh, so you really like the guy, he's not your, it's just stupid stuff, man. Oh gosh, it was much better when they weren't on the show, honestly.
All right, Bryan Danielson and Timothy Thatcher. I didn't even have a lot of notes for this match because I was just enjoying it. I was enjoying all transitions, the grappling, the submissions, the selling, Bryan Danielson selling.
The story they were telling.
Danielson had kinesiology tape on his shoulder, which, so that's the target for Thatcher. There is the shoulder. There was an actual ref bump in this match, though. I was like, of all the matches to have a ref bump in, all the craziness that we saw on the show, and the ref bump is in this match.
I almost broke my TV. I do have two issues this match. It's a really small one. One was before the break, Thatcher had a hold on Danielson. Danielson got the ropes. The referee's going to put on a 5 count, and he got the 4 and just stopped. And then Thatcher released a hold. I mean, Thatcher should know better, and the ref should know better. Like, the ref should just count 5. Of course, they ruined they had planned, but, like, you know, like, I thought, like, it just looked really awkward. And then the ref bump, MJF comes out, teasing he's going to get involved, the cost. Dance in the match, and Takeshka comes out from the side off camera with a hood on to no reaction because people are like, who's this guy?
They didn't know who it was,
and he takes it off, and the crowd was like, it was happening so fast, I don't think they even really so there's like no pop.
Yeah.
And then Danielson, I mean, they fought off, right? I think, like, you know, that I think they could have done this without the ref bump, where Thatcher is, of course, you know, through the whole match, he's just working on that injured shoulder. And then Danielson starts making this big comeback. And looks like, oh, he's gonna finally put, you know, Thatcher away. You know, he has Thatcher on the ropes and reeling. Now MGF comes out, right, to make it look like he's gonna do something to stop this, And then Takeshka just come from behind him, you know, stop him. You know, with his gear on, he just wrestled a damn match, you know. And then start fighting, and then they can fight off. And then at that point, Danielson kind of looks up at this, what's going on, and that's where Thatcher can get right back on the shoulder again. And, you know, but I thought the ref bump was unnecessary. They could have done this a lot easier. And then the whole thing with Takeshka with the hood just didn't work.
Danielson wins with the knee. And I think they need to do the rematch. Premier, bring back Premier, embrace the grind tournament.
Yeah,
and that there's our rematch for them to have this match again.
It was pretty cool. Like, this episode particular is, like, you know, like, you had, you know, Brian Cage did some APW stuff early on. He was even on the Cow Palace show we had, and then one of the Cow Palace shows, and then, you know, Jungle Boy, little promo, so that was cool. And then, you know, there's Danielson former AEW head trainer. And then Thatcher, of course, you know, was, you know, and then also Samoa Joe did a lot of stuff with APW. So it was pretty cool.
We just needed Will Hobbs on this show.
Well, they're still talking about the next chapter.
Yeah.
You're writing that chapter. Was he on? I guess he won on Rampage.
I didn't see it. Brian Alvarez wants Hobbs to win, but he thought Darby was going to win tonight. And then he wanted Hobbs to be the one to beat Darby. Mm-hmm. And then Dave's like, well, if you're going to do that, you might as well do it in San Francisco. Like, if you're going to do it. So, I don't know. I was always wondering if Hobbs is going to get something good for the Bay Area just because they kind of did the slow build with it. I don't know.
I bet you anything's going to be in that Face of Revolution match.
Mm.
And but I hope he maybe wins it. Maybe wins it. And faces, I guess, Warlord for the title? We'll see.
So after the match, Renee is the reporter on the scene as MJF and Takeshita are fighting. And then in her headset, she gets the direction from the producer. Per Tony Khan, next week, Takeshita against MJF. And my first thought, because of the Bunny and Jamie Hayter thing, was, wait, is this an eliminator match? that was the first thing that I thought.
Did she say eliminator match, though?
She didn't say anything.
Oh, she didn't say anything?
But,
okay.
But they did say it was an eliminator match in the next big segment.
Okay. So all the security comes out, try to separate these two guys, MJF and Takeshita. Britt Baker's being attacked by Saray and Tony Storm in the back. No security in sight.
Too early in the show. They weren't ready for it. They were ready for this one, though. Because Britt got attacked, they were ready for this one.
Okay. Yeah. The Tony Khan gave him a lashing. Where were we guys? You know?
Swerve against Brian Pillman Jr. on Rampage is the next match. Say it again.
Trench.
Yeah, was that his name?
I guess. It was almost like even Swerve didn't know. Trench. Yeah.
Then they announced next week for Danielson's match is Roosh. And then in the most junior varsity segment, maybe in the history of AEW, Excalibur goes and I forget the verb that he used, but basically he's throwing the segment and he's like, Renee Paquette and the world champion. And who do you see? You see Lexi Nair and then you see Roosh. And it's like, oh, we kind of got our signals crossed here, but it got worse. They're starting to cut the promo and then MJF pops in. Mm-hmm. This dude was just in a drag out brawl with Takeshita, walks in wearing a completely different outfit.
Yeah.
These two segments did not happen in linear fashion in any way whatsoever. And they played it live. And the whole segment was about, it's very similar to the Brian Cage thing where MJF now has lots of cash.
A briefcase full.
And he's giving it all to Roosh. And all Roosh has to do is beat Brian Danielson by any means necessary and rip his arm off. And he gave him the first briefcase. And if Roosh does that, Roosh gets four more briefcases full of cash.
That just was over the top.
The producing of this show, whoever, like, I guess it's Tony Khan's fault. Like, he's the guy who does it. But, man, someone screwed up. I mean, I don't know who it was, but somebody made a mistake here. And this was not good.
And I don't know why MJF wants Roosh to do it. Roosh doesn't win any damn matches.
I don't know. I guess just because Roosh is the next guy. Like, it went, like, Bryan Danielson wins the match. There's the graphic to face Roosh. And MJF immediately knew that he just had that money waiting. He's just waiting. Who's the next guy that's going to face Danielson? Because I'm going to go and give that. What if it was... The blade. What if it was Blade? Does MJF give him the money, or he's like, nah, you're not getting my money?
Yeah, pretty amateur hour. I thought MJF was really good in the segment, but the ridiculousness of it just kind of overshadowed what the, you know, like I like when, what a great lie when he, you know, Rush is speaking Spanish and he's just saying a bunch of stuff, and then yeah, Jesus, right?
Yeah,
says. He says he accepts. He's like, he said a lot more than that. Like, I think that's the first thing I thought. So.
And there was another subtle thing where he was saying, he was supposed to say, como se dice, and he says, como se dice. That was good.
Yeah. And I like the end of the
languages there.
I like the end of throwing the perro back in Rush's face, but ridiculous segment.
But yeah, it's so bad. It was so bad that I felt really bad for whoever's mistake that was, because it was just this is like one of those major screw ups that
it's like
you're just like oops.
Since they're on TNT, the ghost of WWE 2000 showed up in this episode.
Yeah. All right, Red Velvet, Jade Cargill. Not too long after this match starts, Jade is on the outside and Layla Gray is spending lots of time messing with Jade's hair. Why? Oh, because Red Velvet's got to run all the way across the ring, come all the way back and do a flying drop kick through the rope. And if it was quick, it would have been cool. Time was standing still for Layla Gray to fix this woman's hair for her to sit there and take the drop kick.
And then Velvet, that drop kick of the rope looked like crap. Barry got her. That look came off really, really bad.
So Jade presses Red Velvet above her head. She's on the outside, walks up the steps, and then throws her onto the top of the ropes. That was very impressive.
And that was in picture in picture. And I saw that picture. I was watching live and I said, I hope they show that replay. And they did. Yeah. And I forgot to mention this in the opening match, as Moxley's coming down the ringside with his dad and Wheeler Yuta, Shoshani starts talking about the previous two matches between Hangman and Moxley. And I'm like, well, this is a perfect time to show the replays of those quickly. They never did.
Yeah. So Kiera Hogan comes out and she throws Layla Gray into the steps. Layla Gray was unsure of herself in taking these steps, I will say.
I don't think that was the plan, or Layla Gray has no clue how to sell, because quickly after Kiera Hogan's gone, Layla Gray was back on the ring, up on her feet and cheering on Jade like nothing happened.
So Red Velvet hits a kick, but Aubrey is trying to help the other referee throw Kiera Hogan out of the building or out of ringside. And so she misses Jade being down for a long count. And so it's a two count and Jade finally kicks out. Some stuff happens. Jade hits the Jaded for the win. And she is now 50-0. It was some stuff happened because this whole match was just,
It was bad.
I personally love Jade so much that I watch her wrestle and I'm just rooting for her so much to, you know, to just have, okay, put this thing together. You have every piece of talent you possibly ever need. And it's just so clunky all the time.
Well, she shouldn't be selling. She sold too much and that's not her strength. She looked she was on like ice skates or something out there, you know, like, and she was just kind of awkwardly moving out there. I don't know why they give the visual pin to Red Velvet of all people. Like, I wouldn't have done that. You know, I don't think no one really took her to even be the one that
they were trying to sell this match as like the most important one so far.
Yeah. Well, 50, you know, but the only thing cool about this match was the finish, the way she, you know, powered her up. I mean, I know Red Velvet's not the heaviest, you know, it's still the way she grabbed her, turned her, you know, that looked cool. But other than that, at one point there was a roll up pinned by Velvet and Jade's shoulders cleared off the mat and the refs counting. And I'm just like, oh man, this is bad news. And I don't know what Red Velvet, why she get all heel in this match? Like she talked to Jade right in the silicone breast there. I thought it was going to, we're going to have an issue. And she kind of jawjacks with someone at ringside, right? And then later on, after the match, after Jade wins, she goes to that same corner and grabs her daughter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Oh my God, I thought the Red Velvet talking shit to her little daughter. I hope not, you know, like, gosh.
Yeah, I didn't see who it was, but she brought the daughter up. The daughter was a little shy. I wanted to see the daughter's face to see like a smile of like, that's my mom. But she was kind of shy. Her face was a little tucked into the shoulder.
It's like, I when she does that, you see her daughter, cute kid. You want like she's a baby face, right?
Yeah.
But is she a heel? I don't know. Very confusing.
All right. So Renee is with Britt. Britt's fine. She's cool. She's good.
This shit happens.
And then Ruby comes over and she's like, I just want to make sure we're good. And Britt's like, no, those are your homies. And she's like, those aren't my homies. Like, yeah, those are your homies from your hood. And that was kind of what the discussion was. And she's like, all right. And then she left.
Awkward. Another poorly acted segment. Hey, Britt, you get all of a sudden she's concerned for Britt. Right? Like, they have no real, other than competitors, they have no real history of friendship on the show.
But it's the fact that her friends were acting like dicks. So she doesn't want to be a dick. So she went over to her. But because she's with those girls, or those are her friends, then she's a dick too. Like, that's, I think that's the logic to it.
Today, shout out to the Boom, Kevin Ely, James.
Paul was on there, it.
Just, Paul joined the discussion, and they said it was, or let me mention, like, there's talk of maybe Ruby turning and joining the outsider group.
Yeah,
probably not a good idea, in my opinion. You know, they shouldn't do that. So,
I don't think so.
No,
not with that music. Yeah. Okay,
gotta change your music up. Just can't come up with that.
So for Rampage, the Elite versus Matt Hardy, Ethan Page, and Isaiah Cassidy, Swerve versus Brian Pillman Jr., Saraya and Tony Storm in action, and the main event, Roosh versus Christopher Daniels. Well, that one kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and wouldn't the main event be Bucks and Omega?
Unless that's opening.
It's opening, but it can still be the main event, you know. It's just on early. It's like Saturday night's main event, you know. Sometimes you open up with the big match, and then you have Islanders versus the Young Stallions that close the show out, you know, because it's getting late.
It goes through two commercial breaks. Exactly. And then on Dynamite, Roosh versus Bryan Danielson, the Acclaim versus the Guns in tag team title match, MJF versus Takeshita, the beginning of the Garcia Guevara gauntlet, and then Jamie Hayter versus the Bunny. So our main event, Samoa Joe versus Darby Allin, no holds barred. Darby's wearing a sweatshirt with thumbtacks on it, or a pullover, yeah, or something?
Yeah,
that had thumbtacks on it,
or hooded pullover with thumbtacks. Yes.
Now, how did Joe get cut?
You can see the table spot where Joe brought the first table out from the ring. Darby came with that quick tope, and the edge, the brace of the table hit him right on the eye. I thought his eye was, like, he could have really been blinded with that.
Yeah, okay. It was dangerous. I was trying to, because it looked like he turned, and like he took the brunt of it, like, on his shoulder or something, but I didn't see the thing hit him in the face.
Honestly, it was too, like, I know the Darby likes to do that quick, fast tope, right? But in this case, with the table, with the braces chasing towards Joe, he should have let Joe grab the table, bring it all the way out, maybe do a little thing where he kind of hits the table, like, ha, I'm going to kick his ass with this. And then Darby can fly. So at least when Joe gets to kind of hear the crowd go up, he can kind of start already kind of churning his shoulder and take mostly on that shoulder, you know. But that was nasty. I thought, oh, man, at first I thought, like, it was his eye. Of course, they probably would have stopped the match, but.
Well, yeah, he definitely had stitches.
Yeah, no, he's going to get stitches, over. But I thought, like, maybe actually hurt the eye, you know.
Like the eyeball.
The eyeball. So I think they would have probably, I think he would have stopped there. I don't think he would have screwed this shit. But yeah. But again, we saw tables, we saw brawling in the arena, and there's, here they go, you know, right off the bat with it.
So, of course, it's a big man versus little man match. And here's how Tony Schiavone described Samoa Joe's power. He was too much man for Darby.
too much man.
I was like, ah, oh, all right. That's not how I would have described it as a broadcast journalist, but go ahead, Tony. So Darby takes the Samoa Joe so that he puts the chairs back to back. Darby's got to take the bump on his lower back on top of those chairs. Darby threw some powder in Joe's face, hits the code red, goes to the top with the coffin drop, and he's got the thumbtacks sweater on, but he can't actually get it on correctly. So he hits the coffin drop, but completely misses the thumbtacks part and just goes back. His back hits Samoa Joe on the coffin drop.
He was taking so long with it. What's the name? The referee, Bryce Rensburg, got the Iggy Fire from Tony Khan or whoever's on the call for the match in the back said, just tell him to go. Because he gave him the old Iggy just to go. Yeah.
So Darby couldn't get the pin with that. So he's like, what the heck else can I do? So he starts to cut the mat off of the ring. So we see the boards in the corner. And he crashes and burns outside throughout a table that had been set up like at the beginning of the match.
Did you hear Excalibur's calling that?
Mm-mm.
He goes, oh, man. And Darby took that way worse than if he would have... because he hit his feet on the ropes and went crash down. That it was way worse than if he would have just went through and landed clean on it. And then they spoiled what was going to happen when they said, oh, the last time someone did this, it didn't work out for them. Sure enough.
A little foreshadowing there.
Yep.
So Joe power bombs Darby onto the thumbtack sweatshirt. Muscle buster from the top rope into the exposed boards. He did not call it an avalanche muscle buster.
No.
Joe for the win. And Wardlow comes out. No ponytail, no long hair, clean cut. Clean cut Wardlow. And he comes out to attack Joe. Joe escapes. So Wardlow and Joe is where we're going.
Private Revolution, I'm guessing. You know, God, does Wardlow just get the belt back? I feel like Joe was such a great, pretty good champion as TNT champion. And kind of wonder why this little thing was done with Darby
It had to just be for Seattle, right? Like, that's the only reason.
Yeah, he just wanted to... Darby he's been beaten over the head with, oh, you know, certain guys can't lose in their hometown, so he had to do that. But we'll see. I guess Joe's probably gonna, I can see Wardlow winning it back at Revolution or eventually, but well, they got to heat him up again. I know they reacted big to him because he's been off TV for a while. We'll see if they can kind of heat him up back to where he was. I don't know, but Joe is, you know, made a good opponent for him to get him back that way. So we'll see.
All right. We are done here. We'll be back next week. We actually have a show that we're both going to go to coming up here in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the New Japan show. The same night as Elimination Chamber.
I saw that. And I was like, man, really interested in, I don't know if I'm going to do like whole, like go to New Japan, go to Days After.
No, you know, I don't think anybody's going to do that. I think we're just going to go to the show and go home. I'll watch Elimination Chamber the next morning.
Yeah, I might watch like a little bit when I get home and then just call it. You know, it depends. You never know. I might be out in the club after Japan. Yeah,
rave, man. You used to be a raver back
then. Not raving. No, I'm going to go. Yeah, I'm going to go to a nice bar. Have a nice little cocktail. Come on down, Garrett. We got the Heartbreak Kid. Shout out to Heartbreak Kid. Yeah, Rubio.
We could get a drink after the... We're downtown already. Might as well.
Original Joe's calling her name, you know? I mean, everyone might be there, though.
The spot. Yeah, I know. That's the spot.
Kata's walking in, wants that that big burger they have at the Original Joe's, you know?
All right. So we'll be back next week. I actually have to go in the office two times next week, but I'm not going in Wednesday, so I'll be fine with Dynamite and such. But yeah, I'm not looking forward to that commute. That's for sure. 90 minutes door to door is my commute to work. So it's not going to be fun. All right. We'll be back next week. For John, I'm Double G. See you when we see you. Peace.